You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of Mama's Talking Loud. I'm Jessica Rush.
And I'm Kara Cooper. And you're listening to our episode with Karen Olivo, currently starring as Satine in Moulin Rouge. Hi, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Mama's Talking Loud. I'm Kara Cooper.
And I'm Jessica Rush. And today we have Tony Award winner, Karen Olivo.
Welcome.
Hello. What's up, guys? I felt the need to sing your name. I like it.
Yeah, do it.
I like those
it.
O's the, on either end. You know. Karen is currently starring as Satine in Moulin Rouge here on the Broadway. Mm-hmm. She also was in The Heights and Brooklyn. Remember that show?
Yeah.
And Rent. That was ages ago.
That was a long time ago.
Uh-huh. I know. The three of us have been here for a while.
For a minute.
But Karen, thank you for joining us this morning.
My pleasure.
It is early. Early.
On this dreary New York day.
Mm-hmm. We wanted to speak to Karen because in our Journey to Motherhood series, we are covering all aspects of motherhood and how people come to motherhood. And Karen is a stepmom.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to talk to her about that. And so if you just jump right in, maybe just give us a broad overview of the kiddos. And
Well, I'll start with, I don't call myself a stepmom.
Great.
Yeah, awesome.
I call them my kids. Yeah. I don't say they're my stepkids. Because I met them when Alex was in first grade and Maddie was in fourth or fifth grade. They definitely had a relationship with their mother, their biological mother. And I kind of felt like if I was to label myself as half of something, they would assume possibly in their youth that meant that I loved them half as much. Mm-hmm. So I just said, "You're my kid." And they were like, okay. And because they're young and they don't know and they've never had parents before other than, Alex was like, yeah, that's who she is. So Alex is now 13.
Whoa.
Yeah, he'll be 13 actually this week. But Maddie is 16 and she just got her driver's license.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That feels really bad and good.
Yeah.
It's such a milestone. But, those are my kids.
Terrifying. Oh, my gosh.
And they're both incredible kids. Like, I know a lot of people say my kid is the best, but my kids are not only super smart and kind and really good at thinking about others, they never get into trouble. I don't know how that's possible.
That's wonderful.
Sometimes they try not to do their chores, but like, I'll never have to worry about them.
That's such a relief.
Yeah. Oh my God. We're lucky. We're very lucky.
And they don't live here,
no,
right?
No, they live in Madison, Wisconsin. That's where I live permanently. I'm just working in New York right now.
Oh, got it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And, they spend half of their time with their dad and then half of their time with their biological mom.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Cool.
Was it a difficult transition for you, for them? Mm-hmm. What was that?
Well, you know, when I met them, I was just dad's friend for a while.
Yeah.
And I would come and visit and stay with them sometimes. And, you know, we were very careful to not introduce me as anything other than that. And then after, I would say, like, the fourth or fifth time that I would come and stay and hang out with them and play, Jim, my husband, and I decided that we were going to try to make a go of it. And so we asked them first if, you know, how would they feel about – they used to call me Carrot. They didn't call me Karen. Oh. It's a long story. We asked, would you like Carrot to come and live in our house? And they were like, yeah.
Of course.
And so – at that point, we decided, okay, then we can do this. And yeah, and then I moved in. And shortly after that, we were married. And it just kind of, it should not have worked as well as it did when I look at it, mm-hmm. when I think about it.
Right. Well, there's so many parts of it.
Yeah, you know. Moving parts, yeah.
Yeah, they were just, because they're good kids, they kind of rolled with it. Mm-hmm. And I was very careful not to try to do anything other than what I do. Like I, you know, their biological mother has a very specific role in their life. And I am so different from her that it actually worked out really mm-hmm. well. The three of us now parent them from different sides.
Yeah.
And we are pretty comfortable with handing off to the other person. Like that's your expertise, handle that. And so, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of a dream.
That's amazing. That's fantastic. Did it take y'all a while to get to that place?
Yeah, it was dark. Yeah. There was a dark period of time. Yeah. There were some issues with, I mean, I don't know what it feels like to be, to have children and then have a divorce and then have someone come in and you don't mm-hmm. know them very well. So it was tough for their mom and me at first because we are so different. Mm-hmm. And I think we did a good job of not involving them and trying to get to know each other. And over time, as all things work out, they eventually work out. You stay the course, you keep reassuring the person, this is the person that I am, this is what I want for our family. And you show up, and then eventually they just understand it's going to be okay.
Yeah. Well, you have the common goal is to just love and raise these children.
Yeah. But yeah. I would as a biological parent, I feel like that would be hard for a mom to just inherently trust someone new. So like said, you just have to show up and you have to embody the person that you know that you are so they can then trust you with that.
Wow. That was
Deep. That's a lot.
Yeah. Here we go. Well, how did you meet Jim? Because was this, okay.
Yeah.
So go back. You win the Tony. Mm-hmm. You've been in New York for a while. You're mm-hmm. doing TV and there was something after West Side?
Mm. Yeah. Theater-wise? Yeah. I did Murder Ballad. That's right. And I did Tick, Tick, Boom. And
I
did something at the Public.
So there was other stuff happening.
Yeah.
And then you left.
Yeah.
And it was a thing. It was a thing. Like, I mean, so did you silly. Think it would be like such
God,
a thing?
No,
like
sure not.
When Karen retired or left or it was but did that was the impetus for that James and the kids? Like
It was.
Well, a little bit. I mean, I knew James is his name, but Jim. I call him Jim. I knew him because we did Brooklyn together. He was an A2. He was a sound assistant. So he was the person who like put on my mic. So we knew each other for many years, and we were just friends. We lived really close to each other in Brooklyn, so we would sometimes ride the subway home together. And we stayed in touch over the years. You know, I was married to someone else. He was obviously married. And then our relationships, years later, ended around 6 months apart. Mm. He was 6 months before me, and I happened to be living in L.A. doing a TV show when I started to decide I don't necessarily want to be in L.A. anymore. And he had come through to visit his sister in LA, and he looked me up on Facebook and said, we should hang out. It seems as if you need a friend. Mm. And then that's what sort of rekindled our relationship. And then I became bicoastal at that point. Mm. And I would stop in Madison on my way to New York.
Because that's where he was.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's how I got to meet the kids. And that's how I got to meet his family and get to know Madison. And I kept popping around doing all of these different things. I had a handful of like projects that I was looking at that sort of fell through. And then I was like, what am I doing? Like, I'm not happy on either coast. My work is suffering because there's literally nothing in the tank.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I'm just going to stop doing this. And I have this other thing that I keep. I would arrive in Madison and I would feel like, oh, this is it. Like when you walk into your house and you're like, oh, I'm about to put on my pajamas.
Right.
Like that's what it felt like to land in Madison. Mm. And then I would go to New York and not feel that. And then I would show up in LA and not feel that. And then I was like, screw all of this. I'm just going to go to the place where I feel settled and I feel right. And then I'm going to work on myself because Karen is not okay walking into all of these rooms trying to be somebody that she's not.
That's, girl. I mean, the minute you said like you would land in Madison and feel that you were home, like the place that you would put on your pajamas, like I totally get that. And when you get to a point where it's such a stark contrast to how you feel in other places, how, I mean, kudos to you for not ignoring that.
Yeah, for listening know, to
for
your
listening
instinct.
To your, I mean, you clearly are someone who listens to yourself and like makes your decisions, you know, you live the best life for you, regardless of expectation or, you know.
Which is really hard in this industry. Yeah. It's really hard to not have other people's expectations of you dictate the choices you make. Mm-hmm. So like Jessica said, kudos. That's a big step.
Were you surprised by the response? Well, what made you feel like you needed to write the letter?
Yeah. I had been documenting a lot of stuff. I'd just been like, because I do write, but I don't really publish anything and I don't share it with many people, but I had just started a blog. And so I was sort of, I would write it and then I would send it to like my friend Andrea and like Mandy and Janet and be like, I just wrote this thing. And so when I decided to make that decision, it had come out sort of artfully in my brain. The decision sort of felt like something that I needed to document. And then I was like, well, I'll put it on the blog. That's easy. Maybe I'm just stupid. I just didn't really expect it to be that much of an issue because I'm one person floating on this rock in the middle of nowhere. Like, who cares what I do, decide where I decide to live, truthfully, right? But our business being what it is, everyone's business is everyone's business. And then it turned into something that seemed really silly. And I remember, like, right afterwards, it was during pilot season, I think, I had put that out and it became an issue. And I had lunch with my friend Telly and he looked at me and he was like, people are going to say whatever they want about your choices. He's like, if it doesn't feel right to you to explain yourself, then don't explain yourself. And I was like, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't care what the business decided I'm going to do. They don't really.
Well, this business is going to keep on ticking.
It doesn't matter.
It's going to, you're the story, and then it's going to like keep on moving. And then look who's
popped.
You know what I mean?
Look who's back.
Like,
exactly.
And now Karen is here again. It's like,
so I left it. I was like, whatever you think I did is what I did. Just leave me alone. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Well, it's so interesting too, because in the time when you wrote the blog, social media hadn't really become this thing.
How
would
I know?
Right.
Yeah. Now,
right.
Like you make an announcement on social media, it's like, this is for the public to do with what they will. But how were you to know that it was going to turn into this thing?
My God.
It was a press release. I had no idea.
Yeah, you were writing a press release about yourself.
Crazy. And clearly, like, I love to see, like, I would see things of you, like, talking about doing the pottery and being in Madison, and it was clearly agreeing with you. You know what I mean? It's like, so often, I mean, truthfully, there's part of me that's like, God, I wish something would just come out of the sky and be like, this is what you should do instead, just because what we do is so hard and unstable, and the time commitment and the energy it takes from ourselves and our family. So there was a part of me that was like, good for Karen.
Man. I know, right?
Way to do it. I mean, truthfully, because it is exhausting living this life. So to step away
and not be afraid to do, or maybe you were afraid. I don't feel like you were though. You probably
doesn't
were like,
seem that way.
I'm good, y'all.
It felt like the only choice.
Oh.
Because I knew every time I would come to New York and I would try to do work, I was like, this is not right. Mm. Like I am, nothing in here is clicking. And if I'm here to do the work and I can't do the work, then I have to go figure out how to get back to the place where I can actually do the thing that I love.
Exactly. Yeah. Then why are you here? Like, if you can't do it, why are
you here?
It's
just dumb. Yeah.
So when you got to Madison then, so does their biological mom live in Madison as
She lives like minutes from us.
Oh, great. So then were you just, you jumped right in?
Yeah.
Yeah? Instant. Now, did you?
Ignorantly so.
Right.
Truthfully.
Well, I was going to ask you, like, did you want to be a mom? Was motherhood something, like, in terms of?
Always wanted to be a
really?
Mom. Really? Oh, I mean, my first, like, make-believe was me, like, having a husband named Jack.
I love that name.
And I had two kids. One didn't have a name. The other one was named Taco. If you know me. If you know me.
Jack and Taco.
It makes a lot of sense. But that, I always wanted to be a mom. Mm. Yeah. And then, you know, since we're being very honest, it came to a point in which Jim and I really thought that we were going to have our own child. And after trying and trying and trying, I realized I was not able to do it. Mm. I had fibroids. Mm. I had so many health complications. And then I was like, the more I thought about it, we were like, well, maybe we'll adopt. And I kept, you know, I'm still parenting these two kids and I'm still getting to know. And I was like, if we go to the extent of looking for another child, how will my two children currently look at the situation? You know, at some point they'll be like, well, you needed another one. You have a boy and a girl. It's not like you're like, I want a boy and I don't have one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then it became an issue of like, this is what I've been given and they're incredible. Let's throw all of our resources at these two human beings. And it just ended up being the thing. Like I said, it worked. I don't know how it worked, but it worked.
Well, the way you, just listening to the story, your story of listening to yourself and feeling when things weren't right and moving to the place where things were right, it all fell into place. You wanting to be a mother, you getting to be a mother, something that might have been difficult, sounded like it was going to be difficult for you.
It was going to be so difficult for
you.
You
know, you were given this, I don't know, this gift of a family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had actually had a handful of friends too who had been trying for many, many years to have a child, and I had watched them struggle, and the monetary constraints and the physical constraints and the relationship issues, like it is so difficult. And I was like, why would I do that to this, this unit? So then it just made perfect sense to just be happy with what I was given.
I think that's wonderful. I mean, it's lovely, you know, because it is very true. The journey of whether IVF or surrogacy or adoption or, you know what I mean? It is quite expensive and the toll it can take on relationships. And like you said, you had two kids. So there's probably a part of them that had y'all worked so hard to have a child or to adopt one, even more so. Like if you adopt one, then it's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
We were already here and then you're going to get another adopted. Yeah.
You moved here for
just
us.
Just because you wanted to like have a baby, you know what I mean? So there are probably plenty of babies you can hold all around. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I can go smell a
baby. We know lots of moms.
Yeah, exactly. But I just think that's so lovely. I really am in awe of you, Karen, with regard to how you listen and honor what you feel within yourself.
Well,
that's really on all things. I mean, this has now come up a couple times while we've been chatting. And I just think that it's so difficult to do that. And so often, especially as women, I think, and women, perhaps Latina women, like there are expectations or there are assumptions. I think that going down this journey and just putting all of the bullshit aside and being your person is really admirable. I'm soups impressed, girl.
Thanks.
That's real. Yeah, that's awesome. So I know you do some charity work and that arts education is important. I did not know. I just found this out that your dad was a drama teacher.
He was, yeah.
Oh, my dad's a drama teacher.
Too.
Yes. When I read this, I was like, what?
Yeah.
In Florida.
Yeah.
Mine too.
In Florida?
West Orange High School.
That's crazy.
I know. In Orlando. Winter Garden. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. girl, I literally, when I read that last night, I was like, we've never talked about that.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Well, then you know.
So it was in your life.
Girl. Girl, there was no there, other.
You didn't have a choice.
There was no choice.
Yeah. My dad was my first director.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. People are like, why do you always do it like that? And I was like, because I hear my dad's voice in my head. Right. And he's saying, mm-hmm. you have to do it this way. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, my God. But maybe your dad let you play a lead part. My dad didn't cast me as Annie.
Nope.
So.
Nope.
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 Good. So we're in that
There's
together.
There's some deep-seated issues over here.
I was always in the back.
Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I didn't sing loud enough in an audition, so I didn't get to be Annie, but that's fine.
Oh, my God.
I'm over it.
No. At the age of 39. That's better, though, than having, like, a stage mom. You know, your dad's, you know, taught you. Like, you aren't always going to be the lead, you know?
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. you
but
are.
Now you
so
are the
there's
lead
that.
And you're Tony winner. So I can only imagine the how proud he is of you. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
How that special must... that is. But because of that, I'm sure, is why arts education, you've seen the impact firsthand in communities, how important it is.
Yeah. I mean, truthfully, the thing with art is I feel like it's not just about the... you know, the community building or the creation of art, but I see how it rounds an individual. Mm. I mean, from a very young age, I was taught to accept everyone and to work with people that I didn't understand and to make something impossible happen. Mm-hmm. And that shapes somebody.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That became the thing that I was like, oh, and especially like kids from troubled backgrounds. Like I was a kid who had a troubled background, and that sort of safe haven, that is something that you cannot, I don't know anything else that does that.
Agreed.
I agree.
I would definitely agree with that.
So that just became like a, you know, my dad being a director and a teacher, a lot of times I would just sort of follow him around and mm-hmm. do stuff with him. And then it became something that made me feel like I was a small person, like making a change in the world. When you're so young, like I remember in high school, I'd do like, they'd have like musical theater camps. And when I got to a certain age, they were like, okay, Karen, you can teach like the improv class. Mm. And I remember being like, oh, I'm actually like, I'm contributing something. And yeah. I'm just like this kid. Mm. And that's huge. Mm-hmm. And then I realized later on that like education is like the way you change the future. And I was like, well, why would I want to do anything else? Mm. Had my grades been better, maybe I would have just been an educator, like a, you know, mm-hmm. a history College. Teacher or
yeah.
something.
Yeah.
But
now you're in a position where people will seek your advice because of your expertise in this field. So
you think, right? Yeah.
Is it not that way?
No. I mean, truthfully, my dream job is just to like teach acting. That's my dream job. I'll do this Broadway thing for a while.
Right. Yeah. Don't. Until everyone then. Just calm down.
She still
is not
wants committed
to be on Broadway.
To it, okay. Yeah.
She still wants to be here. But
yeah. There was actually a period of time in which someone offered me my dream job, and it was at a college. They were like, yeah, just come and like be on staff and do your thing. And I was like, oh, wow. And then they're like, you're just going to have to get your degree. And I was like, right.
Yeah.
That degree.
Right.
I'm like a year away from getting the rest of my degree. So.
Well, whenever you
time,
want
yeah.
to, you know.
Maybe after Moulin Rouge, I'll just go and get the rest of those credits and just.
Yeah. You'll have like
you'll
had some
your gut and
power
you'll
in the
know
bank.
Where you're supposed to be.
Yeah. You'll have like, yeah. you know, you'll have had this year
power
and a half.
In the bank.
Oh my God.
Makes everything possible.
Power.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Legit power in the bank, but also like within yourself.
But
you know
yeah,
what I mean?
It gives you a little more freedom to make choices that, you know, mm-hmm. somebody else might not have. You got to pay your rent. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or your mortgage or whatever
yeah.
it is.
Yeah.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFF's creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFF's The Original New Musical from Shayna Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
So I want to know, so you were in, we were just talking about your education and your charity work, and I want to get back to that. But the point of the story where you were in Madison, and then you're back in New York. Like, how did that transpire?
So I was in Madison, I would say, for about like 3 or 4 months before like the first call to go do something musical theater related happened. But this is the other thing. Like, and I've told a handful of people, the moment that I was, that blog came out and I was like, nah, I think I'm going to go do this. It was like, my phone would not stop ringing.
Of course.
Everyone in New York, they're like, she's the only person in the world who could play this part. And I was like, oh, you guys can all go screw yourselves.
Right.
Like, yeah. I've been in New York like for the
last
5 months.
I've been
like,
here.
Looking at your face, being like, what else would you like me to sing? And now I'm the only person.
Yeah.
So when I went back, I was, you know, I was doing my own thing. And then I think it might have been Lynn was the first one who was like, hey, I know you're doing your thing. Will you come back and do Tick, Tick, Boom with me and Leslie at City Center? And I was like, it's a short thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's Jonathan Larson. Right. Love him. Yes. So I would just pop back. So every year I did like one thing in New York.
That's sort of like dreams, I feel like.
Dreams. You know? And it was small and it wasn't high profile. And that's why I think a lot of people were very like, oh, she's gone. Because I wasn't making a big fuss about it.
Right.
I was just coming in, doing the work, and then getting right back out. I think when people started to realize that I was like working more steadily was when I decided to do Hamilton in Chicago. Because it was like 2.5 hours away from my house. On a Sunday night after the matinee, I could get in the car and drive home and sleep in my own bed. I was like, this is I remember actually like getting in the car after a matinee, getting home, sleeping, and like volunteering at my son's school the next day. And I was like, yo, like I did it.
This is
like I won. I won the game of life.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did.
But yeah, that was it. I think that, and then at that point, because Hamilton is so well known, people are like, oh, she's back on the boards. And then, you know.
Right. Well, and what's crazy is this could just be anyone's journey in terms of the ebb and flow of our business.
Of our business, exactly.
You know, it's like only because of the blog post, you know, that became a press release, was it even
was it a thing?
Otherwise, it'd just be like, what's Karen up to? Oh, well, she's just taking time off, or she's out in LA, or she's in Matt. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not about, because
I mean,
there are
plenty
times
of people have their conversations with their agents or whatever, and like, I don't want to audition for the next 6 months, and I just want to take, even Celia, Keenan Bolger was one of our guests, and the toll that To Kill a Mockingbird took on her psyche and her ability to do good work. She's like, I need a minute.
Yeah.
I need a minute to just be, you know? And, but no one's saying she's left the business,
right? Oh my God.
It makes a better story that way.
It does. Right?
Around that time too, like people were like, you know, when they were harping on that, I remember reading something about like all of the great painters, like they would just take years off. They'd be like, yeah, I did this like whole period, my blue period. And now I'm just like getting drunk, like in a brothel somewhere.
Right.
For years. So I can like fill up my brain and my heart.
And be then creative again.
Well, why can't we do that? Like, why can't we all just decide to like hit pause and be like, I'm going to do some stuff so that I actually have something to work from.
Right. Well, and I think that's something that's come into play as mothers too. And I'm sure you could attest to that, like how it's influenced what you bring to the table now and how it has changed you sort of on a cellular level,
Oh my gosh.
With what you have in the tank.
I'm so much softer now. Mm. I was so hard before. And I am much more compassionate because of my kids. I'm also nicer to myself because of my kids, because you know that happens.
Yeah.
You know, performers, we beat ourselves up. We're never good enough. And then you look at, like, I have my... I can't say little because she's 16 now, but she's also a very talented performer and she watches me like a hawk. Mm. And I watch her watching me practice and I realize I have to be kinder because she's learning from me.
You.
It changes everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've just made me better. It's been my own form of therapy in a lot of ways.
Oh, I think there's a lot of truth to that being a parent.
I like that.
Well, because it makes you examine yourself in a way that I certainly didn't before I had children. Right. Like you said, you're seeing yourself through your children's eyes.
Yeah.
And so you're like, I would never want them to treat themselves that way.
No.
So why am I doing it to myself?
Oh my God.
Yeah. You know?
Well, it helps you to just sort of check in too about like when you see them and they're so little and vulnerable, and we all were that at some point. Yeah. So to treat ourselves with kindness and compassion and love and what we show to them, it's easier to sort of remember like, oh, I should do that. We don't always succeed.
No,
certainly not. but it certainly is a helpful reminder.
Yeah. I want to talk about the fact that it is such a coup for you to be playing Satine.
Yeah.
And especially with, you know, how iconic that film is and what probably the general public expected.
Mm-hmm.
Visually in that part.
And talk to us about the process of it. Because I know, I mean, I
take us down that personally journey.
That it was, it's been years in the making.
Yeah, two and a half years maybe.
Yeah.
You know, like I was a huge fan of that movie. The moment I saw it, I was like, yo, this is a musical. Yeah. Like what's happening? When is this going to happen?
I know. It took so long.
Never in a million years did I ever think I would be a part of it. Cause I'm not a strong enough dancer to be one of the Moulin Rouge girls.
Oh, you're killing it. I saw the show. You're doing great.
But truth is, I'm not. I mean, I thought that they were making a mistake when they asked me to audition. And then they're like, no, we're just like, we're really reimagining it. And I was like, cool. And then when it's like that early in a process, you really can put a little bit more of yourself into it. And I learned that within The Heights that, you know, like Vanessa existed for them, but she didn't exist three-dimensionally until I walked in the room. And so I just kept throwing up stuff inside the room and then it would end up being in the show. And so I tried to do that with Satine. Having just become a new mom, that sort of maternal instinct that Satine has and her protection of the people that are sort of with her and knowing that she's the breadwinner for the entire, right. You know, yeah. That sort of thing became very, it was at the forefront of everything. And so, you know, in the movie, it's more about her wanting to be an actress and get away. Mm. And in our version, she wants to keep bread on the table and doors open so that her family can have a place to live, which I completely identified with. You know, there was not as much discussion about me looking different, which I, being someone who is definitely, you know, a woman of color, it would have been nice if that had been. I felt very comfortable, though, in the room, having Sonia Taya. She's the only woman on the creative team. I felt comfortable because there was more of an emphasis put on me feeling empowered.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, absolutely. She's a powerful, I mean, just from the audition process a couple of years ago when I went through it, like her energy is, she's a badass.
Yeah, yeah.
She's not going to take shit.
Yeah.
So, like,
I felt protected.
Yeah, exactly. She was on your side.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there was never a point at which I felt like I was, I didn't feel tokenism or anything like that because I could look out and see another woman of color, Sonia, staring in my face. At points, I thought that it would be hard to be labeled the courtesan and to have all of these horrible tragedies befall a woman of color and that, you know, as a general society, we love to see people go through things. We're more attuned to watching women of color suffer.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that we, you know, Halle Berry won her first Oscar for it. You know, like things like that are very, I always think about that, but there was a way that it was approached with Alex Timber's very gentle hand that I felt comfortable and secure in that. It's still an issue for me, you know, because I, you know, we're past the point of New Yorkers coming to see the show. Now there are a lot of people from elsewhere that are coming to see the show that are not as open-minded, I would say. Mm. And, you know, there's such
fascinating.
There's a huge buildup before I come on. You know, Satine has spoken about, she's the most this, that, and the other. She's, you know, So there's a lot of that. And
you can feel that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's without a doubt. I come down on the swing and I'm like in the audience basically. Yeah. And there are a lot of times what I want to hear is a, like, right. Oh, she's a sparkling diamond. And sometimes I don't hear that. Sometimes I hear dead silence. It's quiet. Oof. And so I'm like, oh, right. They don't know who you are. They don't know why you look like this. You've been announced. They know that you're coming. So in the story, these people know that you're the sparkling diamond and they don't know how to react. So now the work begins.
Oh, Karen.
Here we go.
Yeah.
But that's okay, because if you think about it too, it's very meta. Satine is an underdog. She comes from the gutter. She's clawing her way out. So it becomes a little bit of a more of an emotional journey for me.
Yeah, clawing your way into their psyche.
Yeah,
the audience's
psyche. You're going to love me. Watch. You're going to love me.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't matter. It
shouldn't matter.
Yeah. It shouldn't matter.
Let me show you that it shouldn't matter.
Exactly.
Right. Because telling the story has nothing to do with that.
No, it doesn't.
She can be anything. No.
But there's also power in that. Someone seeing that visually and experiencing the entire show and seeing you go through that entire journey. And hopefully, I don't know, you know, by the end of it, it doesn't become an issue for them.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I can't speak to the experience, obviously.
I would hope that for the people who are not of color, it's not an issue by the end. But what I do know for a fact is that when I go to the stage door, the number of girls who look like me who are standing there sort of stunned and thank me for just existing because I've created space for them in a place in which they didn't feel that there was space. That is the thing that I hope it always matters, because that's changing the way that they see the world.
Yeah. And they see themselves.
Yeah.
That they're capable of.
Yeah. There's a girl last night. I cannot forget her face. She was really great. She like gave me her playbill. She looked at me. She's like, can you sign this? And I was like, yeah. And when I looked at her face, I was like, oh my God, she looks like me. Like she looks like, like a young version of me, like an 18-year-old version of me. And then I signed it and she was like, could I have a picture? And I was like, yeah. And then her mother, who looked like my mom, was standing behind her. She's like, you don't understand. She loves her. She loves you. And then the girl started to cry and she looked sort of like, not embarrassed, but like it's actually happening. Like she was like, the thing that I've been waiting for is happening right now. And she kind of like went inward and I was like, you're good. But I was like, that was me, you know? Yeah. I stage doored. Like, I didn't see anybody who looked like me.
I was going to say the time when we were young. No, that was, it was.
Are you kidding me?
So different. And to see you in a role where it's not a person of color because it needs to be
exactly
in terms of the story. You know, it's not the color
part
purple.
Of the storytelling.
It's not part of the storytelling. You're just a person.
Yeah.
And that is something that is rare. It's changing some, but these are the moments when we can see that.
Yeah.
The change is happening. It can be slow.
Yeah.
Wonderful that Alex and the team and everyone, you know, that they...
Isn't it crazy that we even have to say how wonderful? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Isn't it crazy that is still our mentality about it? Like, it should be just like, yeah, anybody can play this part.
Yeah.
Well, the color doesn't matter.
I mean, and something that I read was that Latinos in this industry, they're less than 3% of active members of Actors Equity.
Yeah.
Less than 3%.
Mm-hmm.
So, man, that's wild, you know? And I think a huge part of that is because of the lack of not seeing them, you know, back before. Like, it was definitely...
Seeing themselves.
They didn't see themselves. And so you can't see... If you can't see a place for you, then how do you know there can be one?
Right.
Right? And
but for you as a kid, you did it without seeing it.
I didn't have a choice, though.
I forgot
Remember?
About that.
Yes.
Right.
The dad.
Dad drama teacher.
Well, and, you know, what Lynn has done, Lin-Manuel Miranda and Hamilton alone. I mean, before that, obviously. But
in the Heights.
Hamilton has just blown the door, I think, wide open in a way and made musical theater accessible to maybe kids who would never have given it a second thought.
Absolutely.
And it's just astounding. And it's... so wonderful that that's happening and so many people are finding us and finding the world that we can create
you know,
and be inspired to do it where they live. And
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah. And that kind of circles back to what you were talking about with education and in different socioeconomic situations and how important bringing theater education is to all the children.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well,
I know this was,
is there anything you want to talk? Yes, well, wait, we should talk about before we go. We should talk about the fact that you're not here alone.
Oh, right. Right.
We're being filmed. Hey, for a documentary. Tell us what that's all about. What's happening?
Yeah, we've been filming for many years. I can't even remember how long. It's been since In the Heights, actually. We've been acquiring footage since then over my career. Just doing like some small little check-ins to talk about life and what it's like to make art and it's sort of developed into a conversation about the intersection of commerce and art and how sometimes there'll be a struggle based on that. And so now we're really just doing it. We have so much footage. And we're gaining more. And we're starting to go out and talk to other people who have interesting stories. And we're making something, and I really feel like there's an educational component to it because there is such, now with social media, the way that we're curating our existence, and there are so many kids who look to social media to see what the world looks like. It's not a direct depiction of what's happening.
Right.
And not that I am someone who thinks that you must revel in the struggle, but the struggle is part of the learning process. Mm. And the great stuff only happens when you understand what you had to go through to get there. Yeah. And I feel like when I teach kids, I see this sort of disconnect. Mm-hmm. They have an idea of what it's supposed to be like. And if they don't see that immediately, they think that they haven't gotten it. And hopefully with this documentary, we'll be able to shed a little bit more truth to what it's like to be an artist and to make things. And there's sort of a duality that exists that it can be bad and good at the same time. Mm. And if we can show them that in a medium in which they'll understand, because they're not going to listen to TED Talks, right? You know, they don't watch TED Talks. Yeah. Maybe they can enter the field with a little bit more confidence, and when the things hit them, they don't get flattened and they don't decide that they're not good enough. They go, oh, right, I remember, I saw in that documentary. Right, things can get really bad and then I pick myself up and it's going to be fine. So that's the longest explanation of what the documentary is about. But yeah, that's what we're doing.
That's so cool. I love that you have footage from such a long
time. I know.
Like, that's incredible.
Is that just wild?
I'm sure it must be to go back and watch.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I see some of this stuff and I'm like, oh, baby Karen. Like, it looks like I just came out of the box. It's shocking.
I would love to go back and see. I can't wait now. I'm super excited. Well, I think it's important. I think there's a generation coming up, like you said, that the instant gratification and the expectation that they should come out of the box fully formed and ready to go. And I find this sometimes with work, that there is a lack of willingness to work hard, and put in the effort.
Right.
And maybe, you know, I even see this with Elliot, actually, with my child. Like, she'll try something, and if she's not good at it right away, she wants to stop.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Elliot, you got to keep practicing, because that's when you get better. I was like, you know, mom didn't dance like that when she was five. You know, you have to work hard. But sometimes it can be difficult to get them to lock in. I think that we're in a world now where the expectation is just.
Well, and we're just expected to have so much output, right? Mm-hmm. Like social media, everything, putting it out there and having it be perfect. And the creation of art is such a process. And there are so many drafts that are terrible to begin with, that to get to that final, and it's never final, please. Every performance you go out there, I could have done that different. Or I'm sure every production that goes up, there are things that end up in a Broadway show that you're like, that could have been better. You know, art is never fully finished.
Yeah.
But you need to fall. You need to fall and pick yourself up again to make it better.
Yeah.
You know?
I think process is the thing that I see lacking in most.
Yeah.
They don't even understand like how to get themselves ready to do something.
Yeah. No.
You know?
Yeah.
They put on the outfit and they have their music.
Right.
And they're like, oh, I'm ready to go. And I'm like, where is your heart and where is your head?
Right.
Like, yeah. I know you've warmed up your voice and you have your money notes, but you're not connected to anything. Mm-hmm. You're floating in space. Yep.
Yeah. It's not just about belting an E.
Oh, God,
you know what I mean? It's like,
please, no.
I mean, but it seems like it is sometimes.
That's the world we live in right now. The flashier, the better. The more impressive, the better. But that's not storytelling or what we're striving for.
So. Yeah.
No, we got to take care of our hearts and our heads, like you said, and our bodies.
Which you are the perfect embodiment of, taking care of yourself and listening to yourself. Done. So thank you for that.
Yes, and thanks for being here with us.
Absolutely, guys.
We're so happy you came. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Mama's Talkin' Loud. Special shout outs to Rachel Spencer Hewitt for our fabulous graphic, Kristen Anderson Lopez, Bobby Lopez, and Justin Ward Weber for our awesome theme song, our producers Dory Berenstein, Alan Seals, and of course, the Broadway Podcast Network for bringing us to you.
If you like what you're hearing and you want to keep the conversation going, you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and of course, subscribe and review us wherever you listen to your podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.